Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Tax Committee to order. And for those of you who are waiting for us to convene, I'm sorry, the floor session took a little longer than we anticipated. So we have 10 bills before us today. We're going to have to be very efficient. First, I would like to have us approve the minutes of March 18th. We don't quite yet have a quorum. I'm sorry, we're close. So we'll delay that a little bit. But we will take up House File 2231. Thank you, Representative Earhart. If you could describe the bill and move it before the committee.
Madam Chair, do we have a quorum, or are we okay, Madam Chair?
No, we don't yet have a quorum, but we can begin the description of the bill.
All right. I just want to make sure that people who aren't here will vote for this without me telling them what's in the bill. I'm kidding. Okay, Madam Chair, this is gives the Metropolitan Council authority to issue debt obligations to fund its capital improvement plan for transit and paratransit, and therefore we have someone from the Met Council. You are someone.
I am someone.
Judge Shetman from the Met Council to explain beyond that.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetman.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to appreciate Representative Earhart for carrying the council's agency bill. This is a bill that we come before the tax committee every year in order to receive the authority to issue bonds for our regional transit capital program. And this year we come forward with a request of $37 million for 2014 and $38.3 million for 2000 and for 14 and 2015. And so with these bonds, we use these to replace small transit capital expenses for all transit providers, just not Metro Transit. This also goes to replace fleet for Metro Mobility, for the suburban transit providers, for our dial-a-ride providers. And again, with this request, we have separated out the request by year, so it shows that we have $75.3 million in requests, but that is specific to 2014 and 2015. And I should also add that these are the funds that we use in order to match federal dollars that we have to replace our fleet. And I don't know if the suburban transit providers are here today, but they support this bill 100%, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Earhart, does this bill, will this provide funding then for the Southwest Light Rail line?
Mr. Representative Earhart.
I'm going to opine that since that, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, that since the corridor is not completed, that we will not be buying cars for it.
Madam Chair, I could not hear him. I'm sorry.
I think Mr. Schuerman is going to clarify here. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, no, this is not to fund or finance the Southwest Corridor in any way. This is small capital. It is specific to fleet and like park and ride bus shelter replacement, and we have a list of projects that these bonds will be used for that I'd be happy to provide you that is clear that it is not intended to finance the capital cost of the Southwest Corridor LRT line.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetton, and that would be very helpful. The other thing, too, is when you do provide that, I don't know if the Southwest Light Rail is still part of your capital plan and where that falls into place. So if you could provide that as well, that would be helpful.
Great. Happy to do it.
Great. And one question, Mr. Schuerman. Does this, in addition to, this replaces buses, so hopefully priorities for the ones that don't have very good shocks. And does it also include bus shelters?
Madam Chair and members, yes, it is part of our overall facilities maintenance program as well, where we either fix shelters or replace them as well. And we have a program that at Metro Transit, the facilities program, that goes ahead and updates those shelters. And as you know, there is a provision in the transportation finance bill that's being discussed right now that deals with upgrading the bus shelter and stop amenities as well. But these bonds here will specifically be used for fleet replacement and for and for shelter and park and ride enhancements.
Thank you very much. With the 50 below wind chills, I know every one of those were cherished this winter. Representative Runbeck?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shuttman, do you have any information with you on the size of Met Council's bonded indebtedness? I mean, what percent of total and so on?
Madam Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, we currently have $89 million in bonding authority in hand. However, 81% of that is encumbered, and that is the reason why we come before the legislature every year, is because we need to have the authorization in hand before we can enter into a contract to replace our fleet. And oftentimes it takes between 18 months to 2 years in order for us to take purchase of those of the fleet, and so we have to have that in hand in order to do that. So to answer your question again, over 91-92% of what we have today is already encumbered, and so what this would be to replace the fleet that is coming up as having to be retired and replaced.
Thank you.
And Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shuttman, I walked in just a little bit late, so maybe you covered this. You mentioned it's going for fleet and for improvements and shelters and things like that. Can you be more specific about where exactly the improvements will be made, which locations? Do you have a breakdown?
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, these bonds will be used and provided to all transit providers through the region. It's just not for Metro Transit. It's for replacement Metro Mobility vehicles. It's for replacement of our opt-out suburban transit provider partners and for dial-a-ride vehicles. And specifically to Maple Grove, since I know that is your district, we have two bus replacement plans with these 2014 bonds. And as I mentioned to Representative Anderson, I'd be happy just to give you a copy of this. I know that our suburban transit provider partners have a copy of this list as well, and they support this this bill and these the authorization of these bonds. But I'd be happy to provide that to you.
Thank you very much. And Representative Earhart, any further comments? And if you could move the bill again before to get us before the committee, we'll be able to have it officially in the record that we considered this.
Madam Chair, I would like to ask Mr. Michael, has this become part of the public finance bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I think 9 years out of 10 it has been part of the public finance bill and passed as in the tax bill. There have been a couple of times when it has not, because either there was no tax bill or, you know.
Okay.
The,
right. So, Madam Chair, that is...
Representative Earhart.
When there is a tax bill, it becomes part of that in a section, or is it a separate bill?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, typically there have been a couple of years when the public finance bill has passed as a separate part of a separate tax bill, but usually it's part of the omnibus tax bill as a separate section in an article on public finance.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Shuttman.
Just to answer Representative Earhart's question a bit further, the Senate included this as part of their public finance article today in their omnibus tax bill as well.
Thank you. Representative Earhart, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion in the bills that will be proceeding out of this committee, public, either the omnibus tax bill or the public finance bill?
I'd like to move House File 2231, whichever way you want to use it.
Madam Chair?
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question. I do see the bill includes two different years of indebtedness authority, and I understand that that's not normal practice of this body. Representative Earhart, can you comment on why you are extending ahead and squirreling away more of the taxpayers' money in a borrowed
Madam Chair and Representative Raskowski, we are very concerned about the possibility of their, the whole world going in a tank, and we wouldn't have the money to replace those buses, and we'd have people walking. So we're going to prepare for that a little ahead.
Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Earhart. Evidently, by your bill, you're expediting that process. Thank you.
And with that, we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion and appreciate your being here. Members, as since we now do have a quorum, I would like to have a motion to approve the minutes of March 18th.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Thank you. And I'd like to again remind people, because we've had people come in since we got started because of the delayed start, that we have 9 more bills to get done before 2 o'clock. And we have, so that's about 5 minutes of bills. So if everyone can think about that as they're presenting and the witnesses are testifying, as well as members in terms of questions, we'll be able to keep making good progress. And with that, I'd like to call up Representative Anzalk for House File 2432.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm joined here with an old friend, Representative, former Representative Lauren Solberg, who is here in the capacity of representing Itasca County. And this is an Itasca County bill. It is pertaining to the financing and construction of their nursing home. It goes back to the year 2003, and it would amend that language passed originally in 2003, which would, this bill will include general obligation bonds as well as revenue bonds as the financing mechanism. This is subject to county approval. They want this authority, and frankly, they want this authority in order to save the taxpayers some money. And that is essentially the bill. Mr. Solberg is here to help answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Anzalk, why don't you just make a motion to bring the bill before the committee, just so we're officially on the bill.
I move House File 2432.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. It's always good to see you again, Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, thank you, and it's always good to be back, I guess. Representative Anzalk has indicated what the purpose of the bill was. In 2003, Itasca County did pass a revenue bond. They asked at the time for the legislature to have a general obligation bond. Legislature chose at the time to have it as a revenue bond. Of course, when you have a revenue bond, your interest rate is more higher than what a general obligation bond is. The revenue from the facility, which also includes at the time a cooperation between the hospital in Grand Rapids that didn't no longer wanted to have some rehabilitation facilities within their hospital as they were constructing a new hospital. They wanted that to be located in another place, so the Itasca County a nursing home put an addition on to also include some rehabilitation services for the patients that were treated at the hospital. The revenue from the facility pays the bonds. There's never been a time when they haven't had enough revenue to pay off the bonds. But if you have a revenue bond, you always have to have a lot more revenue stream in order to get a very good interest rate. If they change it to general obligation bonds, it will save about $1.35 million. The original bond was for $4.435 million. Remaining on the bond is 3.590 as of January 1st, and so this is a simple way of just being able to reduce that interest rate. The cash will still come from the facility.
Great. Any questions? If not, any concluding comments? Otherwise, we'll move to lay the bill over for possible consideration.
Thank you for your consideration, and I move that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I see that we have Representative Seltzer in the audience for House File 2673. Welcome to the committee. And would someone, Representative Carlson, would you like to move the bill to bring it before the committee? It's House File 2673.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll move for House File 2673.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also have an amendment. Should I move that now? It's a delete all, and it's to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Representative Carlson, would you like to move the DE1 amendment? And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you. And if you could describe the bill for us.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. This bill is meant to correct what we think is an unintended consequence of some of the internet tax provisions that were enacted last session, and it's a matter of tax conformity. As the new digital tax law is now interpreted, folks who are sitting in a room participating in a continuing education presentation, such as nurses, teachers, accountants, lawyers, have to do with an instructor, if they're in that room, they're not taxed for the cost of that seminar. Whereas those who are sitting off-site participating electronically in the same seminar are taxed for that seminar. For example, if you're from Greater Minnesota and it's just a matter of convenience and economics to participate digitally, you're penalized for your location in the state for participating in the same seminar that those who may be in the metro area are not, do not have to pay that tax. So it's the same presentation, the same effect of allowing that individual to earn the continuing professional education development credits, but those that are in the room don't pay the tax. Those that are out, not in the room but participating do pay the tax, and this bill would rectify that situation. And I do have several testifiers on the bill, and everyone will keep their testimony short, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And who would like to go first? Is this Mr. Fragnito?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society. And Representative Seltzer has done a great job explaining the bill. And I just would add that as the CPA profession, one of the things we strive for is ease of compliance and eliminating complexity in the tax code. And this bill takes that into consideration and addresses that and makes it easier for people to understand what the requirements are for them when they're taking continuing education classes.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Ben Wagner. I'm one of the co-chairs of the MSBA Tax Section Legislative Committee. At this time, I think the representative and Gino have done an excellent job explaining the bill. We're happy to answer any questions you or the committee might have.
Fantastic. And to our final witness, welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Caroline Belfour, and I am co-chair of the Minnesota State Bar Association Legislative Tax Committee. So as Ben kind of indicated, I will answer any questions as well. I think everything has been sufficiently covered.
Great. Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Seltzer, I'm glad you're bringing this forward. I had a CPA in my office yesterday just speaking about this provision. But I'm trying to refresh my memory. I'm wondering if you can help me out. Was this provision part of the House package, or was this something that the Senate had dumped on us at the very end, or was this part of the House Democrat tax bill as it passed from the House floor?
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson. I will be honest, I would like to phone a friend from the tax
staff
committee. Oh, thank you.
Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it was in the House bill when it left the House floor.
Great, thank you. And was it, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Ms. Dalton, was it in the very original version? Well, never mind. Nope, I got you. Never mind. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to speak on behalf of this bill and be very supportive. I just wanted to make sure that what we're trying to do here is in the governor's proposal. We heard from Commissioner Franz yesterday, and then I'd have a quick follow-up.
Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton, are you aware of whether that's in the bill we heard yesterday?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I do believe it's actually in the governor's proposal.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Donald. I think it's a very good idea. And, these people called CPAs came around. I wasn't sure what that meant. And so they were described as being actuaries with a personality. So I don't know if that's true or not. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
I'll pass.
Any other questions? If not, any concluding remarks? Otherwise, I think we'll move to lay the bill over and for possible consideration. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much.
And who should we take next? Daphne. Is he? Okay. Representative Daphne?
Excellent.
We have before us House File 2657.
2657. It's a deal. Afternoon, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2657 to be before the committee.
Thank you. And please describe the bill for us.
All right. Madam Chair and members, taxpayers who owe the Department of Revenue more than $500 in back taxes, interest, and penalties, run the risk of having their professional licenses revoked. So not their driver's licenses, but in my case previously a teaching license, things like that. There is a process where the Department of Revenue notifies the taxpayer previous to that, about 30 days before the revocation, actually about 40 days possibly. They send a letter to the address that the taxpayer has provided informing them of this. If the taxpayer then has the opportunity to have a hearing before the OAH, administrative hearing folks, or to just enter into a payment plan with the Department of Revenue. If they fail to do either of those things, if they don't engage or choose not to contest the department's finding of being in arrears, the department then notifies the board, that whatever board is involved that holds their licenses, and directs them to revoke the license. They then have 10 days, the board, to revoke that license. The problem is that often when taxpayers are in arrears and they know they're in trouble, as one example, a letter from the Department of Revenue is the last letter they're going to open. And so they end up in a situation where they may not necessarily know that their license is on the line, and they proceed and then suddenly end up without their license. What House File 2657 does is say, instead of having Revenue send the letter, let's A, change it from a letter to a certified letter so that we know receipt is in the hands of the license holder. And secondly, let's have it come from the licensing board, because having been a licensed professional, I have a higher level of responsiveness to that licensing board than I may to the Department of Revenue at a time when I know I'm in a bad spot with revenue. That's not the only scenario, however, where this might play out, and I have with me today a individual who can speak directly to what another scenario where this can be a problem.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gretchen Garcia. I'm the president of the Task Education Association, which serves Eastern Carver County Schools. I'm here on behalf of a member who was reluctant to come in person. When you owe money and it can't be paid, there's a lot of shame and embarrassment that goes along with that. So imagine that situation compounded when I had a conversation with my human resources director, receiving a letter from the Minnesota Board of Teaching saying that this member, otherwise to our knowledge in good standing, great standing, 23-year veteran in the classroom, facts teacher at middle level, had their license revoked. So I said, I'll take this one. I went and met with the member during their duty day, because you cannot be on the floor teaching with a revoked license. Met with them on their prep time and shared the bad news. As soon as we began the conversation, she admitted that there had been some financial difficulty, but clearly the spouse was holding the information from her, the dire straits that they were in at that point in time, and she was not aware that her license was being revoked at that point in time. So the member left the floor, and I just want to read a snippet of her story so that I can bring her voice into the conversation. Earlier this fall, I was notified at school to meet with my district office. Unknown to me, I was going to have my teaching license revoked. I can't begin to describe the shock and embarrassment of having to leave the classroom because of unpaid income taxes many years ago. I will acknowledge the fact that my husband and I should have been communicating with each other about this issue, but we didn't. So when my license was revoked without any notification to me personally at school, I was shocked. Luckily, I was able to pay the debt and return to the classroom in 3 days. This was only possible because of the help of my union and our attorney. Many people don't have these resources to help them. And she goes on, but that's the gist of what we're looking to remediate. This individual and our position is not that people should be avoiding their taxes by any means. It's simply a remediation to the notification process so that the member or the license holder is in the loop, the communication loop, and can take the necessary steps to protect their license. Thank you very much for your attention, and I will take any questions.
Thank you very much. And Representative Davney, do we have another testifier? I have one on my list. Or is that just a backup if it was needed?
Playing backup.
Thank you. Questions by Representative Schoen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Davney, I'm just trying to clarify. So there's current law, but now you're just adding a notification, making sure that the notification process is there?
Representative Davney.
Madam Chair, Representative Schoen, we're doing two things. One, there currently is a notification process. It's a letter from the Department of Revenue. We're upgrading the letter to a certified letter, at which point the license holder must be the person signing for it, whether they receive it at home or have to go to the post office to receive it. They have to sign for it. And secondly, we're changing the notifying agency, shall we say, from the Department of Revenue to the licensing board. So the post board, in your case, would be the ones who would then notify you, with the idea that if you get a letter from the post board, that's probably the first one you open that day. If you get a letter from the Department of Revenue, it's probably the last one.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, thank you. I had no idea that as a licensed peace officer, I could have my license revoked for non-payment of taxes. I learned something new every day here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just remind Representative Schoen that April 15th is coming soon.
I've been holding out so that we can do tax conformity.
Seeing Representative Davids.
I don't know if this bill's been moved for possible consideration, but I'd like to move it if it has not been.
Thank you.
It has been moved.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Davids. Without seeing any other motions, we will lay the bill over for a possible inclusion. And I'm just going to jump to Representative Simon, who doesn't have the pleasure of serving on this committee, but is here and ready to present a bill. And then I see that Representative Savick is also ready to go, and so we might take those next two as the next two bills before us. Welcome to the committee, Representative Simon. And it, I have just been informed that the summary in the packet has some errors, and maybe we can clarify that as you explain the bill, and that we have a delete everything amendment. But first I need a motion to bring the bill before us. Representative Davney moves the House File 2517 be before us. And would you also like to move the DE1 amendment?
If
to,
I may, Madam Chair.
Bring all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Thank you very much. And if you can explain to the committee then, Representative Simon, what we have before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know you're pressed for time, so I'll be quick. This bill really will enable more homeowners to stay in their homes by saving their homes from tax forfeiture, giving people an interest rate break. That's really the bottom line here. It's got bipartisan authorship. It's the product of some work with a lot of stakeholders, none of whom at this point or ever, as far as I know, oppose the bill. But I think we have a consensus package here. But for more information, let me turn it over to Mr. Elwood, and he can explain more details.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself and tell us what the DE1 amendment does.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Currently, the interest rate on tax property defaults is 10% as a floor. And this bill will be very narrowly tailored to only those homeowners who are interested and willing and able to enter into an agreement with the counties to repay their taxes, back taxes, and avert tax forfeiture. I want to thank Representative Davids for co-authoring the bill. And I just want to say that we have worked on this bill with want to really thank the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Intercounty Association, Metro Cities, and the Department of Revenue, all of whom have worked on this bill to get it to where it is today before you. And Madam Chair, just briefly, if this would be helpful, I have Luke Grunman, staff attorney with Legal Aid, and he can share a client story if you would like it, but if not, for press for time, it's your call.
Members, would you like to hear a brief description of a situation?
Madam Chair, I once read a book called Shut Up and Sell. When you got the deal, you cut and run.
Given the time, I think that's good advice. And seeing no further questions, Representative Davney renews his motion that we lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much. Representative Savick, welcome to the Tax Committee. And while you're getting settled, the revenue estimate just came in. We're keeping our state staff really busy with all the bills that are coming through, and that's going to be distributed now, just so if people are looking in their packets for that. Welcome, Representative Savick, and Representative Slocum, would you like to move House File 2951 to bring it before the committee?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move 2951.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Welcome. And thank you for the hearing. And this is a very simple bill. All it does is correct a bill that was passed last year, the Greater Minnesota Business Expansion Credit, which allows businesses that are adding jobs at their current location in Greater Minnesota to receive a sales tax exemption in construction materials. When DEED implemented this program, they asked for a few changes, streamlined the program. None of these changes are will cost any money. It simply makes this program easier to implement to the department and easier to understand for the users. The bill is primarily technical in nature, with some changes to the program. In the spirit of the on-session, this bill will make a program we enacted last year even better. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier so he can explain what it does.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Miller. I'm with Flaherty and Hood on behalf of the Greater Minnesota Partnership today. First of all, I'd like to thank DEED for working with us on streamlining this program to make it something usable for them. While they didn't get everything they wanted and we didn't get everything we wanted, I think we came to a pretty good compromise to make this program work better for Minnesotans. So I'm just going to go through the changes that we've made to the program just to kind of explain where we're coming from. Beginning on line 2.1, the bill clarifies the original intent of the program, that those listed businesses, those listed industries, can't use the program. We intended this tax credit to go to manufacturing, processing, construction, agribusiness, mining, timber, and other traditional Greater Minnesota businesses. We just want to make sure that entertainment and professional services don't qualify for this tax credit. On lines 2.25 and 2.26, we lengthen the time DEED has to process the application from 60 to 90 days to kind of fall in line with the way they do things at DEED. Lines 2.28 to 3.5 look a little more substantive, but really it's a long way of making it so that instead of a complicated formula to find out if an employer is expanding enough to qualify for this tax credit, we just say if you're growing your job, your workforce by 10%, you qualify. Line 3.13 shortens the certification period from 12 years to 7 years, which puts it more in line with DEED's other programs. And line 3.15 clarifies when the tax credits actually start. Section 3 on page 3 provides DEED with discretion as to the size of the tax credits. We wanted them to have this discretion from the beginning. They wanted it, but we all felt it just needed a little more explicit language to get it there. And line 4.1 and 4.2 clarify that this credit can only be used in Greater Minnesota. 4.14 and 4.15 say that a business can only receive credits up to the amount specified in a business subsidy agreement with DEED. Those are all the changes just made to kind of clear things up. And again, we thank DEED and other people with a vested interest for working with us on this.
Thank you. And are there any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to either the author or the testifier, the Greater Minnesota Business Expansions Program, can you just explain that a little bit to the committee what that is?
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Garofalo, this is a bill that we brought last session that had originally been designed to be a replacement for the JobZ program. It would qualify, it would work for businesses in Greater Minnesota that were expanding their workforce. So if you were staying put in the city where you existed and you were growing, you were adding on a new wing of your building, bringing on some new employees, you were doing some kind of expansion, we wanted initially to give you three different tax credits. We wanted to give you a tax break on the sales tax on the construction materials. We wanted exemption from the statewide business property tax. And we wanted a jobs tax credit where you could get 7% of your additional payroll as a tax credit. In the end, through negotiations, the way things worked out, we ended up with just the sales tax exemption. But we're going to work in future by any means to slide some more things into that. And so that's what the program is designed to do.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And to the author of the testifier, the sales tax exemption, run for me again what that is, what that applies to, what do we exclude that from? What the
Mr. Miller.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, it's strictly for construction materials as you're building onto your physical building. Originally, we also had it to include capital equipment, but then last session that was passed anyway.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And to either the author or the testifier, so why does this only apply to cities in Greater Minnesota? Why does it not? Or I see there's an exclusion for agricultural facilities that don't have to be located, but why is this not? Why does this not include townships? Why is it only cities?
Mr. Miller.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, in working with the bill, we wanted it to be apply to businesses that were part of their community, had been there for a long time. We had the 1 year they had to be in that city for 1 year, and we just felt that businesses located in a city would be the most likely to use this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the expert testimony from this very well-qualified witness.
Thank you. We all appreciate it. Clear explanations. And with that,
Chair,
some concluding remarks?
Yes. Yeah, can I ask Ms. Dalton to comment?
Yes, Ms. Dalton. And the question you have, Representative Savick?
I think Representative Garofalo was wanting a little more detail, but I think maybe got covered.
Oh. It feels like people are understanding where we're at, so thank you very much. Okay. Any concluding remarks?
All of these changes were made in consultation with DEED and others who have vested interest in making sure this program succeeds. As you can see, these changes are streamlining and simplifying the program that will help grow business in Greater Minnesota.
Thank you. And now we'll renew the motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much for coming. Okay. And I see that Representative Schumacher is in the room. Welcome to the committee. And we have House File 2483 as the next bill on the agenda then. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Schumacher, and could we have a motion to bring the bill forward?
I'll move the bill.
Thank you. Representative Lanchesky moves 2483 before the committee, and Representative Schumacher, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill in front of you right now that I'm asking you to support today repeals an expiration clause within the county aggregate tax provision and statute. In 2008, the imposed rates for counties went from 10.5 cents per cubic yard to 21.5 cents per cubic yard. And when that went into effect, counties that border two other states and were not next to a county that imposed this tax were still allowed to impose the 10.5 cent per cubic yard rate. The rationale behind that was that the exemption really affects Rock County, and that's the only county that's currently operating under this provision. And that's because it's surrounded by five other counties that also produce are also aggregate producers, which include Minnehaha County in South Dakota and Lyon County in Iowa. When this change was discussed in 2008, the local township boards and county commissioners felt that having this exemption would give them an economic, or being part of the normal statute would give them an economic disadvantage. And this exemption, they have found, has worked over the past few years, and they would want to have this allowed to be continued. I'd ask for your support.
Great. Any questions? If not, we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I don't see Isaacson, do you?
That was so bad.
Okay, Representative Davney, House File 2606 with the State Agricultural Society.
Another tax break.
Tax break for Schumacher.
He was in early.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 2606 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report.
Great. And if and you might explain the bill.
Well, Madam Chair, there is an A1 amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order which I prefer.
Yes. Okay. The author has moved the A1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. So adopted.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The House File 2606 as amended, simply extends the authority for the State Agriculture Society, better known as the Great Minnesota Get-Together, to issue bonds for capital projects for an additional 10 years. We first authorized this authority in 2003. It is set to expire in 2015, and they're here ahead of time to make sure that the authority is extended in all the proper ways. With me today is Ms. Renee Alexander, the Deputy Manager of the Minnesota State Fair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Glad to be here. As Representative Dabney mentioned, we have had this authority since 2003. In that period of time, we have borrowed, used our bonding authority three times to basically cover capital projects that we've done over the course of those more than 10-plus years. So we're just looking to extend that authority to bond.
Representative Runda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a curiosity question. Is your authority to bond under the state then, or are you a separate entity that has bonding authority?
We are a separate entity that has bonding, so the state is not backing these bonds whatsoever.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you for being here. It must be one of the funner jobs in state government to manage the state fair, although maybe you have to taste all those things. with that, Representative Dabney, would you like to move for this to be put laid over for possible consideration?
So moved, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And while we're waiting for Representative Isaacson and Hansen to come, they are on their way, we hope. Chair Lincheski, you had an announcement. Maybe this would be a good time to share that.
Sure. And Representative Davids and I talked on the floor today about this. So folks know that we were going to release the omnibus tax bill on Thursday. And Representative Davids and I had a conversation. There's been a lot of activity in the tax area in the last few days, so that's all good. And I've met with the speaker, and we're going to go ahead so folks can not sit here all night Thursday, and we're going to release the omnibus tax bill on Monday. So we won't have a meeting. We'll just post it online, and we just think it's kind of the staff's had a lot of work to do. It'll give them more time, and folks can spend the weekend home instead of here. So if Representative Davids can comment, I'd appreciate that too, Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And after yesterday in the afternoon, I think there's some things have started moving a little bit better, and I think it'd be best just to take a look at this on Monday and then start digging into it next week. So I certainly support Chair Lincheski and her idea of waiting till Monday on this.
So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Lincheski.
So thank you, and thank you, Representative Davids. I just want to, you know, let people who are following and working furiously to get their things done by noon tomorrow to know that we'll be doing that on Monday then. So we've got some time. Thank you.
Great. Breathing room is always appreciated on a deadline week. Representative Isaacson, welcome to the committee. And we have House File 2783, and Representative Lilly, would you like to move the bill to bring it before the committee for Representative Isaacson? I don't think he heard.
I will make a motion.
Representative Lincheski, thank you very much. So moved.
I'll triple it.
Welcome to the committee, and please explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time today. Today I'm presenting House File 2783, and it's really, as Ramsey County likes to say, an economy of scale. It provides an opportunity for smaller cities with small staff or small numbers the chance to do some housing improvement areas through the county rather than being able to do it on their own. And they've approached the county and asked them for it, and the county has brought it to me, and that's why we're here. It's something that was done last year for Dakota County. It's almost it is literally the exact same authority. What I would ask for a little bit of clarification on is we thought we were going to the general registry, and we got brought here. I believe the reason why we're in front of taxes is related to the bonding authority. Is that correct?
Mr. Michael, maybe you can clarify how we would handle this proposal.
I just want to make sure I zero in on the part that's germane to your committee so I don't get us lost in unnecessary weeds.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dakota County provision, I believe, went through the tax committee, and in general, the tax committee enacted the general law or handled the legislation that provided the general authority for housing improvement authorities, and that dates back to the 1990s when it initially began as, I think, a special law for the city of Hopkins and St. Louis Park, and then became a general law for all cities. And, of course, these would allow it to be used by an HRA for the county.
Perfect. That's very helpful. And so I'm going to turn it over to my testifier then to walk you through what we're trying to accomplish, and then maybe say some really persuasive things at the end. That's my plan.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Mary Lou Egan. I work with the Ramsey County HRA. And since this committee is familiar with the bill, the cities in Ramsey County, some of the smaller ones, have asked us to partner with them using economies of scale. Maybe there would be several HIAs across the county at a time to provide staffing and oversight for housing improvement areas. We wouldn't do it without the request of the city. And I can go into a lot of information about this, but since you're in a hurry, unless people have specific questions.
Since it's following a precedent that we've seen before, I don't see anyone with any questions. So I think we understand, given... Representative Drazkowski.
Oh, I think Representative Drazkowski is up first.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski has been recognized by the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Egan, I saw this bill in government operations, too, and I remember the discussion, a question I had about whether both a county and a city could contiguous or simultaneously have this HRA taxing authority. Could there be landowners within the county then that would have HRA tax on their tax statement from both the city and the county unit on the same tax statement?
Ms. Egan.
It's not a tax as such. This is a loan to property owners who have asked for this money. If you choose to pay this yourself, it wouldn't go on your assessments. Otherwise, it's a fee to repay the loan for fixing up the property that goes on your tax statement as an assessment to make it more affordable to people who otherwise couldn't come up with the $30,000. So only if you are in the property that has asked for this would you be getting this fee.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Egan, this HRA area, housing improvement areas, we have so much government I can't keep up with it all, I'm sorry. But these housing improvement areas would be, several blocks of a city, or would they be one building, or would they be potentially a few square miles of the county under this new bill, or what would they look like?
Ms. Higgin.
Typically, it would be one building. We assisted in one in Little Canada that was two contiguous properties that were one right next to the other, that was one housing improvement area. But it would be one building, it would be one association that would come and ask for this assistance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, or Representative Dabney, I'm sorry, if you were here first.
Thank you, and I'll pick up, thank you, Representative Drazkowski, because I now know more than I did a minute ago, which changes the question. It sounds like this is a financing mechanism for common ownership properties that are not able to find that financing in the private market? I'm just trying to understand what this is.
Representative Isaacson.
What it is we have normally done through the cities. And when the city is too small or unable to really manage that, they don't have the capacity in terms of staff size, they have asked the county to administer it instead. That's pretty the long and the short of it right there.
And yes, it is a financing mechanism.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Isaacson, what would prohibit this from applying to individual single-family residences?
Ms. Hagan?
The law currently, Representative, is set up for common interest properties such as condos and townhouses. And this is just giving the county the authority to act as a city under the existing legislation, which only covers common interest associations.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Seeing no further questions, we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time today.
And Representative Hansen, House File 1983.
Okay.
Welcome.
Welcome, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is a great bill, and I'm hoping folks vote for it and really make a pitch to the chair that this could be included in the omnibus bill. Mm-mm. It's a great bill. And to tell you how great it is.
Before we include it, you have to move it.
I will move House File 1983 for possible inclusion. And I have testifiers here to tell you how great it is.
Okay. Thank you, Reverend.
Welcome. Please explain how this wonderful bill to us.
Yes. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mark Alpers. I'm the executive director of the Dakota County Community Development Agency. With me is Andrea Brennan, also with the CDA. The CDA was created by a special act of the state legislature back in 1971. We manage over 30 separate programs dealing with affordable housing, community development needs throughout the county. Presently, we serve over 10,000 clients on a daily basis, and we have programs that range from helping homeless to people buying their first home. We also work with our cities and a number of other community development and redevelopment programs. We're now a more diverse county that has many challenges and needs. Since 1990, we've used the federal housing tax credit to produce over 1,300 units of affordable housing. We've constructed new homes, we've rehabilitated older homes, and we've built homes for special needs. As the county continues to develop, providing transit opportunities has become an important priority. The red line down Cedar Avenue, which is a bus rapid transit line, opened last June, and there are additional lines being planned or considered on 35W and South Robert Street, and also to Hastings. Currently, state law restricts the federal housing tax credit in the Twin Cities metro area. And I want to emphasize we're talking about an allocation of federal tax credits to the Community Development Agency, and this does not involve tax increment financing, state property taxes, state income taxes, or any other state taxes. But the proposed legislation would authorize the CDA to conduct a pilot at up to three projects that meet the transit criteria for transit-oriented development. Specifically, it would provide us a little flexibility on the mix of bedroom sizes that are allowed in our development. Right now, state law is very restrictive on bedroom sizes for new construction. This change would help us better match the bedroom sizes with the need and get us further down the road in trying to provide some affordable housing near transit in Dakota County. As I said, it would be a pilot for three projects. We would report back to the legislature after the pilot to share with others, you know, how this worked and whether folks can learn additional ways to provide affordable housing in the suburban context along transit. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Again, the current law has been in place for 25 years, and we're looking for some flexibility from this law to allow us to have, say, more ones and two bedrooms and less threes.
Just Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, sir, could you just tell us more about, I mean, I understand about the federal tax credits, mm-hmm. and that's all you're accessing.
Correct.
How many people are out there doing construction and development using those tax credits in your area?
Mm-hmm.
What's the activity level?
Sure.
Mr. Olfers.
Madam Chairman, Representative, the Dakota County area receives $1 million in these tax credits per year. We then have an application process where developers apply for these credits. Typically, in a typical year, we have one, maybe two projects per year. Right now, we have two townhome developments for families, one in Inver Grove Heights and one in Egan under construction. We have another one planned for construction also in Egan this summer. So typically, it's one to two projects. Since 1990, it's been a total of 1,300 units over those, you know, 24 years. So it's a resource that's provided to our county based on our population size, and it's the Affordable Housing Tax Credit, which is part of the federal tax, income tax guidelines.
And Madam Chair and Sir,
Representative Runbeck,
are the tax credits a use 'em or lose 'em thing every year then? Or
Mr. Elfers.
Madam Chair, Representative, correct. If they're not used in our area, we return them to the state. The state then holds a competition and allocates them elsewhere in the state if there's a need. If there's not a need, then it's lost to the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. And perhaps to Mr. Alford, the question I'm concerned question is whether or not, my understanding is that you're saying that the major change is that it would be less one and two or more one and two bedroom units and less three bedroom, and yet hearing from housing advocates, I've heard that it's actually affordable family size apartments that are the greatest need that they see. And so can you tell us why your demographics would be unique?
Madam Chair, representatives, the CDA, as I said, has over 30 programs, and a lot of those programs are geared towards family, specifically large family housing. So we are addressing that very important need. We also address affordable housing needs throughout the affordable housing continuum, as I said, from homeless to helping people buy their first home. With respect to housing along transit, we want to reflect what the needs are, the market needs are along transit corridors. And what we're asking for is flexibility so that we can have a different mix of bedroom sizes than is what presently permitted under state law. We're very, very aggressive and probably the most about, you know, providing large family housing. All three of the projects I just mentioned are all large family housing developments that we have underway or will be starting. But within the context of the transit areas, our corridors of opportunity study has recommended this statutory change so that we can better reflect the needs of people who may be using transit, especially workforce housing folks that might be a couple or even a single who may be using the transit line to get to work. There's also some concern that if you build too many three bedrooms on a very, very busy road, that there'd be some safety concerns. And under current law, you would have a substantial number of children on very busy transit corridors. To give you an example, the building we just opened this summer, we have 70 school-aged children in our large family housing development.
Thank you. And Representative Davenport had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just trying to better understand, to the testifier, you indicated the safety concern about building multi-bedroom units on busy roads. Mm-hmm. I see, though, that the language of the bill allows you actually a half a mile on either side of, that's light rail and bus rapid transit, or a quarter mile from high-frequency local bus lines, which are going to be on busy roads. Mm-hmm. So is the concern that the buildings would only, are you limited to only having these buildings on busy roads, or is there a margin of a distance either side that you can build them on?
Mr. Elfers.
Using the tax credits.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, presently the state law doesn't address transit-orientated development. So it's silent about what location you can locate a development in. The criteria here as far as location is based on the Metro Council and state criteria for a transit area. So we were referencing state and Metro Council criteria so that we were sure to fit into that category of transit-orientated.
Representative Davenport. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Davenport, I think this may help both your questions. That we went through Representative Clark's committee on housing, and the reason the bill has a cap of three units with a report back is to make sure that we're not, I mean, I'm fully aware of with multi-bedroom, we want to make sure that we are providing for the needs of people, and we don't want to say if we're moving only to single bedroom that we're excluding folks that may have large families or maybe have multi-generations that are involved in that family. So that's why we've got the report back to look at how this is and how this is being implemented so that we're not having any unintended consequences of the development. We have, particularly in my district, I have a lot of seniors. So the single bedroom and the transit is a way to respond to that need. We want to make sure that we're not having bad consequences with how we're doing this, so we've capped it at 3 units with a report back to the legislature to see how this is implemented. And it could provide a mix of single bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom in the unit, rather than having it just be three bedroom now. That's the flexibility that we're trying to get, so that we, if I'm wrong on this, this is, we're trying to have that mix so that we can get respond to those market needs that are out there and the demand that's there. We think, you know, this is, and we're limiting this only to Dakota County, so that we can report back on how these developments, we anticipate it's three that we'll be doing.
Representative Davin.
Thank you. Then either Representative Hansen or the testifier, what other counties in the state currently have this authority, and what's their experience?
Madam Chairman, Representative, there are several sub-allocators or folks that allocate these credits directly. A few are counties, a few are cities. Minneapolis and St. Paul have this direct authority. Washington County on the county level have this authority. Then I think we've got St. Cloud, Rochester, Duluth.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, sir,
Representative Davney.
And so they do this greater mix of one bedroom currently.
Madam Chair and Representative, the criteria that we're looking to modify only exists in the metro area. So all those entities outside of the Twin Cities already have this flexibility.
And so who in the metro area? So Minneapolis and Washington County have this authority already, and Dakota County is simply wanting the same authority that other metro entities do?
Mr. Olfer.
I'm just confused now.
Madam Chairman, Representative, this would, we would be the only one within the metropolitan area with this pilot project authority.
Okay. Thank you. That clarified. That answered the question.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Jaskowska.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr.
Olfers.
You mentioned that other counties outside the metro have this authority, and I don't know that we have any transit stops in Winona County. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are, but not the portion of my district anyway. We've got some hay balers and other things. But can you talk about again, the full allocation of this that comes to the state of Minnesota, and this is going to increase, obviously, Dakota County's ability to use a higher proportion of that to which they are initially, qualified to look at. Is that?
No,
I'm seeing you shake your head. I didn't hear you properly.
Members, this is not increasing the amount of resources that come to Dakota County at all. Zero. We're using our current allocation that we've had going back before 1990, and it's giving us some flexibility to have different bedroom sizes in the units that we assist. When I say we have the same flexibility in outstate and greater Minnesota, it's that they have the authority to do whatever bedroom sizes they want to do now, elderly, one-bedroom efficiencies, whatever. True, it may not